You're listening to Band Geek with Richie Castellano on the Riotcast Network. Riotcast.com.
Hey guys, what's up? Richie here. This is Band Geek episode 23 with Joe Cumia and Vince Tatinelli. This is part two. If you missed part one last week, really quickly, let me give you a recap. Joe and Vince play together in the nationally touring tribute bands 2U and Almost Journey, which are tributes to U2 and Journey. We also covered the fact that Vince is a founding member of the band 9 Days, who you might remember from the song Story of a Girl. And Joe does the music for his brother's show, The Anthony Cumia Show, and he also did music for Opie and Anthony. So we go into that a little more. Before we get started, please help support the show by going to our Amazon link at www.riotcast.com/bandgeek. At the top of the page is the Amazon link. You click on that before you go shopping, and then a small percentage of what you buy goes to support the show so we can keep doing this. We really appreciate that. Please check out our sponsors, Audio Technica. That's audio-technica.com for all of your headphones and microphone needs. They're a great company. Everything you hear on the show is done with Audio Technica microphones, and we listen with Audio Technica headphones, and they're my favorite. So please check them out. Also, please keep going to iTunes, rating, and commenting. All that stuff is awesome. Thank you very much. I'd also like to give a big thank you to Anthony Cumia for giving us a shout out on his show. That was freaking awesome. A huge help. Thank you very much. And thank you to Joe for giving us that hookup. Okay, so where we left off last time was Joe was about to tell us how they do double duty, how he and Vince can do a Journey show and a U2 show in the same night with the same people. And we also go into detail on what he did for Opie and Anthony and his brother's current show. So check that out. The Journey band and the U2 band, that's the same guys?
Same four guys. Yeah, we trick a lot of people. We open for ourselves.
Get out of here.
Sometimes, yeah, yeah, we do. We'll come out and Gene will take the, Gene Marcello is the lead singer.
Oh, cool.
From the Good Rat, well, he's son Good of. Rat Pepe's son, yeah. And he'll take the, either put the glasses on or take them off, depending on who's playing first and who's playing second.
So when you guys go out on the road for an extended period of time, you have to bring both sets of gear, pretty much.
Yeah. I've learned how to minimize my gear. I use a Hamer with a Floyd Rose locking whammy, and that pretty much does. It's another SSH, so it does. Single humbucker.
Right.
It does a ton of. A ton of different sounds. It's got a phase selector switch on it and stuff. So that and the pedal board that I use for the U2 stuff, I use the same pedal board. The higher patches are all the Journey stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. I just like keep them all separated. And Vin turns the drums around. He uses two rack-mounted toms and a couple of floor. You know, because Larry plays with a floor tom to the left of the hi-hat.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Kind of weird.
So you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me. Oh, for the U2 thing? Yeah.
Yes.
I have a question about the U2 thing. So do you... Now, it's the weird thing to me about... Now, I've always had like a fantasy of like, oh, I want to be in a Queen tribute band or a Beatles tribute band. Like, there's not enough Beatles tribute bands. But... The weird thing about having those bands is they're not playing anymore. So you have pretty much a set in stone list of tunes, and people's impression of those bands will never change. But when you're doing a band like U2, who's still making records, isn't it do you find it odd that a decision like they make can affect your livelihood? Like the whole thing with Apple
right now.
Yeah, we
have homework now.
Yeah, like you have new stuff to learn.
Lots of homework.
And also, if they make an unpopular decision, not saying, look, that whole Apple thing has blown over by now, and people don't give a shit anymore. Right. But the week it came out, like, how dare you put this stuff on my phone?
How dare you give me a free
record?
And that
was Bono that said that.
Yeah.
It's like, never mind. So,
there's actually an app to remove the record.
Yeah, I know.
Like, really? Just delete it if you don't want it. But, I mean, come on. It's a free album. Like,
exactly. But, like, the thing I'm asking is, that's something you have to think about. Like, do you watch, like, what they're doing all the time? Like, oh, please don't say anything stupid. We have gigs coming up. You know what I mean?
You know, man, the back catalog is so huge with those guys. There's so many songs that people know and want to hear. I mean, the same person that says, you know, how dare you put the Miracle of Joey Ramone on my phone, says, you know, dude, let's dance. It's Sunday, bloody Sunday, you know? I mean, and they do that a lot, let me tell you. I mean, you know, people that really don't understand or know what some of these songs are about. Like, you know, I've had more than one occasion where I get a phone call from a bride to be, and she says, "Well, our wedding song is going to be One." I'm like, really? Do you know what that song's about? Do you know what the song One is about? It's about barely keeping something together by the skin of your teeth. You know, a lot of people don't understand that. And then there's the party animals that want to hear Bloody Sunday. Play Bloody Sunday so we can dance and have fun and celebrate the fact that there were, you know, scores of people killed in a church.
Right.
You know, due to a bombing. And, come on, man.
I had a gig once where I had to do a song for a girl's bat mitzvah. And she wanted We Are the World.
I thought you were going to say like Rammstein or something. No, but, go on.
But I had to rewrite the words to We Are the World. And I told the person who hired me, I was like, you realize that this is a song about famine in Africa? You know what I mean?
There you go.
And I'm like, what? It's like, well, you're going to make it about the girl and how beautiful she is. I was like, but you realize that.
What the song is really
like,
about.
Any
Maybe
other
not
song.
With this song.
Yeah, any other. Like, no, they want that. Okay.
We did some very strange gigs. I shouldn't say strange, but they actually, these things, they were. It was called a U-Tucharist, like a Eucharist, but it was a U-Tucharist. I shit you not, Reggie. What? This is what we did. We were up right? I wish we could have gotten that.
You can't.
I'm telling you, we set up on the altar, and it was up in Connecticut. Some wacky local.
Of course,
local,
it was up in Connecticut.
Local, right? Some wacky local. I believe it was a Protestant. I think it was Protestant, and we ended up setting up on the altar, and the padre there would do his, you know, would talk about how each one of these songs means something. Like, you know, End of the World was the Last Supper. I mean, it was about the Last Supper.
Oh, okay.
Until the end of the world.
It's not funny anymore when you explain it.
You're right. But well, there are tons of Gloria. Yeah. You know, 40 is about, you know, Psalm 40. I mean, there's a ton of songs that that have a very Christian thread. I mean, the common thread is the, you know, the Christianity thing, and we played these U-Tucharists, and a lot of people don't get it. I mean, it's all about, you know, the party songs, you know, like,
right,
play Where the Streets Have No Name, play this, you know, it's an atomic bomb. Yeah. That's what it is, you know. It's like, you know, it's Where the Streets Have No Name. You know, the streets don't have any names because a bomb came and blew all the signs away. And, you know, the poison rain, dancing the poison rain. So, you know,
well, that's the brilliance of that band, that they could reach. That's like subliminal implantation of important ideas. Like, let's put it in something that people can dance to. But, and when you know all the words, and somewhere in your mind, you know that this is a serious thing, but, you know, that's a great way to spread a message, you know?
You know, to the intelligent people that you're speaking to, I get it. But there are so many, like, you know how it is out in the bars. There are so many, you know, like, just party girls. Oh, play. And I had one that really cracked me up. This was the best one. This girl comes up right to the front of the stage, and she goes, come here, come here, come here, come here.
Like, that's the first problem.
Come here, come here,
come here.
because so you're on Long Island.
As you're playing, right? As you're playing.
Yeah.
While you're singing and playing at the same time, about, she walks up.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was just about before the song ended. And she goes, "Can you play Someday, Buddy, Someday?" "Someday, Buddy, Someday."
True story.
"Someday, Buddy, Someday."
Oh, we have to try to do that now.
What key is that in?
That's what we do on this show.
It's someone, it as a jazz odyssey.
What, B minor?
I've actually checked it. Yeah, there you go. "Someday, Buddy, Someday."
"I read the news today." "Close my eyes and make it go away."
There you go, done. I wanna talk to Vince a little bit, because I have first of all, Vince, this is the first time I'm ever playing with you, and you're very impressive. You're a fucking amazing drummer.
Oh, thank you.
There's two things. How did you get started?
Wow.
All right, next question. Okay. Talking to the mic, I can't hear you.
Actually, I started out on piano at the age of 12. I wanted a drum set, kept asking my parents for a drum kit, ended up with a piano. Okay, we'll start there.
Bocelli had the same story, except with accordion, so it was worse.
Stop name dropping.
There was an accordion in my home as well. My father played accordion. So
his father was the polka king of the Midwest.
That's what John said too. Are you guys brothers? Do you have the same dad?
No, but he's actually played in 9 days.
He's played in 9 days.
Wow.
His dad was in the Kenosha Kickers.
I love this guy. He is the king of movie references.
That's awesome. That's the only reason
he's
here.
That's the only thing I'm
He should definitely stop in on Anthony's podcast one day. Oh, he would kill.
Wait, can we all get uninvited and you just
want to
hang out with
me? I don't need you.
No, I have a feeling we shall party. We shall party. This is not going to be the end of this. We will end up at the compound one day soon. But Vin, the story that I got from his bandmates when he was playing in a band called pre-Wonderama. What was before Wonderama?
Before Wonderama.
What's Wonderama?
Because Wonderama was a cover band.
Yeah. Which was 9 days, but with a female singer as well.
Aha.
Jill Brian. Joya.
Okay.
Yeah, Brian DeVoe, John Hampson, was Jeremy in the band? Yeah, he was. Well, I heard from Brian DeVoe that when Vinny was a kid, when he was a little kid, they kind of knew each other. You know, you knew John Hampson. And Brian told me this story. Brian DeVoe told me this story that Vinny was a okay drummer. He wasn't, you know, anything great. And then one summer, he basically disappeared. He just disappeared off the face of the earth, and he came back the following school year, like the best drummer in the school.
Well, now I was getting there.
I'm sorry, did I step on your story?
But that's totally fine. But that's basically what I was always an aspiring drummer, but my parents would not buy me a drum kit.
Oh wow!
So I basically went through piano, guitar, bass, whatever. I kept saying, "I just want a drum kit," just to shut me up. They buy me something else. And I ended up learning each instrument and ended up playing in bands, playing that instrument. But I ended up with a driver's license before a drum kit and came home with one. Wow. That was the summer of between junior and senior year in high school.
Now, was there montage music playing while you got good the drums? Because it sounds like that sounds like a movie. Like, I disappeared for 2 months and I did nothing but train the drums.
That's pretty much what I did. I spent...
That's not a real thing. Come on.
He did it on the top of a mountain.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like with Ivan Drago or something. Oh, no, Rocky was on the top of the mountain.
Somebody else.
Go ahead, Andy.
Then I found them at Sam Ash.
It's too late.
Andy, your joke is gone. So that's what was playing while you were training drums? And you got a little better? And down the road, there was a big Russian. Oh, Boris was down the road.
Boris.
And he was, and he had all this technology. He had V drums. And you had like two.
Vinny, come in and play some V drums.
Right. And you were playing on like, you know,
pigs hung up in a freezer. Oh, he's got... So there's your montage.
Awesome.
So that's an amazing story. Cause,
now it is. Well,
yeah. When you put montage...
We made it amazing with the montage music.
Next time you tell that story to someone, call Andy and he'll play it on the phone and so you can really add drama to it. So, okay, so you're doing Wonderama, and was John in the band from the beginning? Or you had just had the girl singer?
No, actually, Wonderama came about after a cover band. Well, we were in another cover band prior to that.
Right.
I guess what happened was we wanted to make 9 days accessible. Not accessible. We just wanted to turn it all into one thing so we would be able to play
right.
as much as possible.
And do that 100%.
Right. And it just made sense to just make it the same band.
You got the opportunity to live through an experience that every musician dreams about when they start playing. You had a hit song, right. and you got to hear on the road. What was that like? Because I've never known that before, and to just hear about it is so great for people who wish for that.
It's an amazing experience. Yeah. One day you're riding around in a van, not knowing whether or not the band is going to succeed or not, and next thing you know, you're playing Madison Square Garden.
Oh, man.
That song was enormous. I was a teenager when that song came out, and that was my jam.
You say every song's your jam.
No.
The funny thing is you're told your whole way coming up that it's a long way to the top, and it's going to take a long time, and it didn't happen that way. It happened really fast.
Well, you learned how to play drums in a month. You're on some sort of accelerated course.
I remember when that song broke in Russia.
You know, Boris, with his band in Russia, had the same experience.
Back to Boris again.
Only they call it story of a girl with moles all over her face. What they call that.
I mean, do you remember the first time hearing you on the radio?
Yes, I almost drove off the road.
Oh, you were in the car?
Yes.
Oh, awesome, perfect. Please tell me that story so I can live vicariously through you.
That happened in, I guess, 1997 or 98. We'd won the BAB Homegrown Contest and put out a record on our own. And the first time I'd heard that song was driving to the Village Pub. Almost crashed into someone else.
Oh, man.
It was awesome.
And they all stopped at his father's appliance store. and they were dancing with cardboard cutouts. And he hugged Liv Tyler. That was awesome. It was great. It was awesome.
Oh my God.
And then you went to Chasen's with Suzanne Bouchette.
He just took a beautiful moment from your life.
Get this guy out of here! I'm trying to have lunch!
He just took one of those beautiful, meaningful moments of your life and shit on it.
That wasn't the first and it won't be the last one. He plays in a band with me. Yes. He knows better.
I'm used to this.
Oh my God. So, being that you're a Long Island drummer, we have to, and you are the second Long Island drummer we have, put you through a test that we called food drumming.
Food drumming.
I should call Danny to do this.
Okay.
If he picks up the phone.
He's busy. He's in your favorite band.
Let me see if I know I gotta stop calling people in the middle of the podcast, but I don't really give a shit. I'm gonna try calling Danny and see if he could.
Danny's
chime in. He's probably sleeping and be pissed. Can everybody hear this?
Yeah.
Danny's busy getting jobs in Hall & Oates and Katy Perry and...
Danny, I'm playing Katy Perry tomorrow.
And Squeeze.
Danny's working on taking my place in 2U right now is what he's doing.
Why does no one pick up the phone when I call him
on
the phone?
I now own your livelihood!
Oh, God damn it! I can't. I've tried this four times on the show, and no one ever picks up. Okay, I'm going to sit in for Danny here. Danny did this test to John Michelli on our last drummer episode, and because you are an Italian Long Island drummer, We're going to do something called food drumming.
That's rare.
So what food drumming is, many Long Island Phils in the Carmine Appice school of playing and who followed down to other players like Bobby Rondinelli, have food associations. So I'm going to name a food, and I would like you to recreate that food name on the drum set.
I've never done that.
That's because I fucking invented it. That's why you've never done it. Okay. Actually, no, Danny invented it, but I'm stealing from him.
Well, it all started with the broccoli.
Okay, so we're going to start you off with an easy one, okay? The first one's going to be mozzarella, mozzarella, mozzarella. Can you do that on the drums, please? This drum does. Hold on, let's tape this. Hold on, I'm going to tape you doing this.
There you go.
Okay. So the first one is mozzarella, mozzarella, mozzarella. Here we go.
Yeah, very, very good. Okay, that's it.
Very
that's
good. Yeah, Andy, give him some
one point.
Give him a game show like. Good. Very good. Okay. This is a little more challenging. Okay. This is pasta fazool. Pasta fazool. Pasta fazool. Hold on, judges. Will you accept that? Yes, we'll accept it. Very good. They have to go higher in the next one. Yeah. There you go. Okay.
Half step.
Okay, here's a half step. What are you doing? What are you
doing? Half step at a time.
There you go. Okay. Now we're going to get into the lightning round. This is going to be a little more challenging. Broccoli rub. Broccoli rub. Broccoli rub. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
It's in their DNA. It's in the Long Island drummer DNA.
Here at Band Geek, everything comes back to food eventually. Okay, now this is one that I don't know this one, but Danny invented this one. He goes, "Via beats, via beats, via beats." And I think it's on the cymbals. That's right. That's it. He's got it. Woohoo!
They're all the same.
Listen. This is not a... This is a half-baked idea. I'm trying to get mileage out of it over here. Anybody else have any other Italian food?
Isn't there a combination of pasta fazool, broccoli rabe?
Oh, right. That's really the advanced round right there. Ah. Now, can you give me a four broccoli rabe? Like I had four pieces of broccoli rabe on my plate. That's right. Very good, very good. Congratulations,
Vince.
You've won.
You've won a cannoli.
Yeah. You can have a cannoli or my wife's cheesecake when you... It's funny, when Joe and I first talked on the phone about doing the show, just like any other two Italians who talk, we ended up talking about food for half the time. And he and I are on a similar diet right now where we both eat like low carb. And I heard him wax poetic about, you know, ziti. He's like, he goes, "You know, I'm eating grilled chicken and vegetables. All I want is just some pasta." What's your favorite? What do you miss the most?
You're kidding me. Like loaded lasagna. A lasagna loaded with like with mozzarella and ricotta and meatballs. And like, you know, the way grandma made it.
Oh, yeah.
That was exactly that.
Mozzarella meatballs.
Mozzarella meatballs.
Eggplant parmesan, love it.
Oh yeah.
You know, you have to take the eggplant lightly breaded with a little bit of egg and bread. Oh, come on. And what are we eating? We're eating grilled chicken over field greens. Here, Vin, grilled chicken over field greens. Do it.
Oh my god. It's going to be very simple for me. I miss pizza because pizza is a big no-no, and that's like a fall off the wagon food for me. I'll be okay. I can eat my
one slice and it's all over.
I can eat, you know, I can have a little piece of bread and I'll be fine. I can have, you know, a cookie every once in a while and be okay. If I have a slice of pizza, I'm having six slices of pizza. There's no one slice of pizza. And I live in Staten Island, which has some of the greatest pizza.
There's no shortage of good pizza.
Oh, my God.
It's like pizza leads to calzone.
You know what I mean?
It's just that's an entry.
It's a gateway.
It's a gateway drug. It's a gateway food.
It's a gateway food.
It leads to calzone.
Oh, my God.
And before you know it, you're doing like buckets of mozzarella and ricotta, just raw. out in the street.
You're freebasing mozzarella.
Giant block. Surrounded by sausages.
Giant block of cheese.
I'm lactose intolerant, and I don't care. I don't care.
Come over to Richie's house. Are you curing your own meat in here? No, it's somebody else's. They left them here.
I swear it's not mine. It's not mine. I'm holding it for someone to bring it back. Oh, my God. I have a feeling this is going to be a two-part show. Sure. So let's play another song.
Let's play a couple more songs.
Yeah. So what if you were doing, say, a gig, like a cover gig, whatever. It doesn't have to be U2 or Journey. What do you like playing? If you want to sing something, or if you want Anne-Marie to sing something, or anybody, like, what do you feel like playing? Wow. Let's put you on the spot.
It's not really put me on the spot. I mean, I know when I do gigs like that, it's acoustically. Mm-hmm. I'll just sit down. I have a looper. I use a harmonizer, and I play. Yeah, you know, I tap a beat in and do that kind of thing. Right. But I mean, from when I was a kid. Especially like, you know, on Long Island, growing up in the 70s, I used to do a ton of Southern rock. I mean, Southern rock stuff is kind of easy for me to sing, too. You know what
all
I
right.
mean? I mean, I'm a baritone. So what Allman Brothers or Skynyrd or any of that stuff were?
Do you know like One Way Out or something like that? Or
Yeah, regular blues thing. I mean, that's yeah. Yeah, stuff. How about,
I might be able to do Whippin' Post. Do you remember Whippin' Post? We used to play that with our band. Yeah. I could probably remember that a little bit. Hey, you know what? I got a great idea. Wait, Joe, do you know Whippin' Post? Are you learning it right now? Sing this? Hey Joe? Can you sing this song?
I could get a good piece of it. Yeah, right. I think I got a piece of it.
I'll get the lyrics up just in case. So if you give me the sign.
I've been run down, I've been lied to.
Oh yeah.
Don't know why. Let that be woman make me a fool.
Good. Right, here we go. Everybody rolling? We're rolling here? Okay.
Roll down,
off the top of our heads or off the back of our asses. However you want to look at it, that's where that song came from.
Hey, no, playing's fun. Playing's always fun.
Oh, man. You guys are great. We should do gigs together. If there were places to play, I would love to do a gig with you guys.
I'm telling you, right? We do some shows. Like I said, me and Anthony go out every once in a while, but he's going to be doing some bigger shows. Like, he's got about 40,000 subscribers now.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty decent for a podcast, you know. That's awesome.
Well, he had a pretty good following for a really long time also.
I mean, he did the work.
I know Joe keeps talking about his brother, and if you've been living under a rock, Joe's brother is Anthony Cumbia, formerly of the Open Anthony Show, has his own show,
yes,
which I've been listening to and is fucking hysterical.
Hey, so, his mind.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And now he's sort of unrestricted by any sort of network standards, and he's just doing whatever he wants, and it's great.
Yeah.
Do you do? Eric mentioned to me that you've done music for the Open Anthony Show. Is that?
Oh yeah.
Now what did you do for them?
I've done a ton of song parodies. I mean, every time they need a song parody, I like.
Which ones?
Oh,
where'd that voice come from?
Now I'm afraid. Now I'm really afraid to tell you.
Don't worry, she's not a feminist, so you
No. I spent a good chunk of my life listening to that.
I did
show.
The Black Earl song, Black Earl, to Patches. It was Black Earl, you're a genuine lazy bum. Black Earl was the one of the guys that a producer for Ron and Fez for years when they were on WNEW back in the day. I did a couple other ones that I really wouldn't like to mention in mixed company. not one of my proudest moments in mixed company, but I did his theme song to his podcast now.
So you're still his musical director.
I do pretty much everything musical having to do with the show.
That's great.
It's definitely a good it's a good little job to have, you know.
Now, do you do that at your home studio?
Yeah.
What's your rig?
I'm running a Mac with dual Intel processor and I have about three terabytes of storage on the thing.
Nice.
And I run Logic 9. I still haven't gone to 10. I'm running 9. I like it better. 10 looks like GarageBand. it sort of does. No, Pro Tools looks better than Logic 10. Logic 10 looks a lot like GarageBand. It looks a whole lot like GarageBand to me. 10. You know, I mean, it's just the wave.
They're both great. They just do different things.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love this.
Yeah.
I love that. Right? This is Band Geek, and we could talk about this.
I'm telling you. Basically, I mean, I record pretty much everything direct. Vinny was just sending me in the right direction for a decent mic pre, you know, for some decent pre's.
Okay, Vinny, what do you think? What mic pre's? Let's go.
Mic pre's. Anything Neve, anything SSL.
Okay. Yeah. So and now Neve, are you talking about the new like Portico stuff, or are you talking about you got to go get an old Neve?
I'd rather have an old Neve.
Okay.
Yeah. Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't? All right, exactly.
And some of the Neve copies are pretty cool too, like the
Vintage. Oh, I thought he was talking about Neve Campbell. Neve Campbell.
You want a new one of those.
Here at our studio, on my voice, I have an SSL preamp. Everybody else goes through the Mackie. But on my golden throat, we have to have the SSL. But my friend Tony has a studio in Staten Island called Phoenix, and I remember he had like a rack of every preamp you'd want. He had the APIs,
right.
He had the old Neve 1073s, he had the Avalons, he had it all. And I just remember liking the sound of this, and I said, I bet you this is the cheapest, you know, preamp here. And maybe that's why I was drawn to it, because I know a good deal when I see one.
Right. you don't want to fall in love with anything expensive.
Yeah. But so have you narrowed it down what you want to get for preamps?
I was in the Guitar Center the other day and I saw an Avalon that looked like it was expensive. It wasn't cheap.
Yeah, looking
but that would pretty much do what leave it to me. I mean, I'm not a real like, you know, tech geek. I mean, I know something about a lot of things, but I don't know like, you know, in depth the way this guy does. He does it for a living. so the whole time I've been on a writing bender like for the past couple of months. All of a sudden, songs come with come to you, and it's like anytime I want, I go downstairs and just start recording. So there was just something missing. I couldn't put my finger on it. He's like, "Well, what are you running for mic pre's?" I'm like, "I have an M Audio board that I I run into. That's it, you know." It just fattens everything up, man.
Yeah.
It gives it that sound.
It makes everyone sound like George Takei.
There you go, George. Oh my!
Oh my!
Oh my! George Takei.
So are you getting this for your podcast studio? Is that the idea?
Yeah. Well, for the studio in general, yeah.
So how many people on at a time do you want to have on? Do you have to get like 7 Avalon preamps?
I'm hoping not. That would run into some.
Yeah, where are the rest of your SSLs?
I have the one, so I can say I have one. And it's like when you have the roll and you have like $100 bill on top,
right?
An old
it's all
ones under. That's my studio is the equivalent of that. I have like my one nice piece.
Here. And the Mackie.
And all shit for everybody else.
By the way, we mentioned George Takei. You guys Star Trek fans? I mean,
yeah, okay. Span geek.
Well, here's a pretty crazy story, man. My brother had William Shatner in the studio. He got on first name basis with the guy. He's like calls him Bill now. It's like, hey Bill, how you doing? And William Shatner's out in the out in the green room. I could see him through this glass. They have a big glass window over at Sirius XM Studios. And he was hanging out on a couch waiting to come on. Or he had just finished and he was waiting to leave. And my brother, being the dick that he is, he goes over to the window and he taped this. It's on YouTube. If you look it up, you can find it. And he starts banging on the glass. And William Shatner looks over at him. He's like, "What? What do you want from me? What?" So Anthony goes and he puts his hand up against the glass and he goes like this. And he goes, "I always have been and always shall be your friend."
Joe's
James
currently
Kirk.
Doing the Spock hands, but
I'm up against the glass and like dying doing the death scene. And William Shatner is like, "Oh, what are you doing?" Just like waving it off, going, "You're a moron. You're a moron." And Anthony's doing the whole death scene. He's like, "Come on, you're supposed to be crying and stuff."
I knew I was a nerd because I did that. It was second grade, and I had another friend I met. His name was Andy Ostrega, and he was also a Star Trek fan. And we would sit with each other at lunch by ourselves, and we thought it was a great idea to reenact that scene for our whole class. And I remember being in second grade asking the teacher, like, "We'd like to do a scene from a movie." And she's like, "Why?" I was like, "Because, we'd like to present this to the okay." So me and this kid got down on the floor and are holding each other's hands, and he's going, "Spock." And we're like, second grade is what? It's like 8 years old?
Yeah, I think so.
Or something. No, it wasn't second grade. It was I'm sorry. It was sixth grade.
Oh,
right?
That's a big difference.
Yeah. So we were like 11 or something. And we're on the floor going, "You shall be, you have been and will always be my friend." I did the whole thing. And we're thinking, "Oh man, the people in our class are going to think this is fucking cool." And then I looked around and that's when I first realized, maybe I'm not cool.
You know what though, man? Let me tell you something. It doesn't. The only thing that changes are the TV shows or the movies.
Yeah.
Because I know exactly what you're talking about. I used to do the same thing, but it was with a show called The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Okay.
Do you remember The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
No.
Napoleon Solo and Ilya Kuryakin. And everyone wanted to be Ilya Kuryakin. Okay, you guys are much younger than me. That's what's going on right now. But The Man from U.N.C.L.E., we used to do the same thing in school. It was like, I was in maybe third grade, something like that. And we used to do the same thing. We played Man from U.N.C.L.E. out on the playground. But yeah, that's pretty much, wow, I was a geek too.
Well, I'm noticing that you have a Man of Steel shirt on.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so, sure. What were your feelings on The Man of Steel?
I thought it sucked. I really didn't like it.
So why are you wearing a shirt?
Like the movie?
it was clean.
I got it for free.
It's just a shirt. I wear all kinds of shirts. I wear sports shirts, and I'm not a sports guy by any stretch. So I'll wear a Yankee shirt.
Misrepresent.
I'll wear a Yankee shirt up to. I'll wear a Yankee shirt up to Boston. I don't care. Oh. As a, And I'm wondering why, you know, fans are booing me. It's got nothing to do with my playing. So you're wearing a freaking Yankee shirt in Boston, you dummy. And then I have to tell them, you know, like, no, I'm not a sports fan. You're sure really you're not. Sure you're not. Oh, sure. You're not a sports fan. Sure.
Yes, yeah. No, you're not.
No, you're not. Yes, you are.
You know what? When I saw you pull up today and I had a Superman shirt, I'm like, oh, thank God. Now we're going to have things to talk about now. But, you know, you've been an awesome guest, and this is the easiest conversation we've ever had. But you said you're a nerd. So what would you say now you're a nerd for? Like, how about like TV shows or stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't get to watch as much TV as I like. I would say movies, man. I mean, I'm, you know, a big movie guy. I like quoting movies. Like, out of the clear blue, something will come up and it'll be like, you know.
No wonder why you're like this fucking guy. Really,
I don't know what that's like at all. That's my only vocabulary.
Lines every once in a while come up. Somebody tweeted about my brother. They said, I forget what they... Like, how could you... they said on Twitter, they said something like, how could you think it's funny just to copy movie lines, you know, to spew out movie lines? And I retweeted it, and I said, I said, when he does these invitations, he sounds just like the real people. I was like, from Goodfellas. Right? And they had no idea what I was talking about. They're like, well, I know he does invitations, but he's always, you know, quoting movies. I'm like,
Can I do a douchey name drop thing really quick? You mentioned Goodfellas.
Why stop now?
You know, it's funny. You and I had this conversation how we hate when people do that. And this whole episode, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know that guy. Oh, yeah. You're such an asshole. I apologize for coming off like a jerk. But my uncle is in Goodfellas.
Get out. Who is he?
He's the doorman at the Copacabana.
Oh, no kidding.
And the story, this is actually a cool story to tell on this.
I like the story, actually.
It was, to that point, the longest single camera scene in history.
I know exactly. Going through the kitchen.
And they go through and Ray Liotta goes to my uncle, who's wearing a tuxedo, goes to the special back door of the Copacabana, and he goes, how you doing? And my uncle goes, how you doing, Hendry?
You know what I mean? Yeah. How you doing, Hendry?
Yeah, and just, that was it. And they did the whole camera shot, and it was done. And my uncle didn't have a SAG card, because when you're an extra, you don't need one, if you don't have any lines.
Right.
So Scorsese went back and was watching the movie. He goes, oh, that guy just said something. Who's that guy?
Right? Not allowed to say.
And he goes, does he have a SAG card? No, he was an extra. He just said something. You know what I mean? If you can, I just picture Scorsese going, yeah, he just said something.
What do they call that? They call that a pass, when they give you a pass on, like if you don't have a SAG card and you're in a movie, you can now get a SAG card.
Yeah, well, it depends, like on that situation, they probably paid his dues.
That's what they did.
You know,
Because they said, okay, well, you have two options. You can get this guy a SAG card, or you can get all those people back and redo that shot with him being quiet. Wow. So he's like, get that guy a SAG card. So that's how my uncle got a SAG card.
And that's so awesome.
So that's one of those things where I'm like really in the movie, like we mentioned before. I'm like, there's my Uncle Phil.
My dad could have gotten in Heartbreak Ridge. He was in. I lived in Southern California for a while as a kid. My dad moved out there. He became a cowboy. Yeah, he left us, but he became a cowboy, and then he sent for me and Anthony, and we lived out there for a little while.
Cool.
San Juan Capistrano, California, Southern California, back in the 70s. It was the Wild West. I mean, these people used to like ride horses into the bar. No shit, they would ride into the bar. And that's where the swallows come back to Capistrano every year. The birds come back to Capistrano, and it was an amazing thing. One day I'm watching Heartbreak Ridge with Clint Eastwood, mm-hmm. and there was a scene in a bar where there was a scuffle, or it was actually a confrontation between Clint Eastwood and the guitar player guy, the black guy that played guitar, and
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, right. Clint Eastwood says something. Clint
Stop
Eastwood says
saying
something.
My racist comments.
And he throws his head, and my dad's in the background. You clearly see him. He throws his head back and starts laughing. He's got his cowboy hat on and stuff. And I didn't know that he had done that until like a couple of years after he passed away.
Wow.
So I was watching Heartbreak Ridge, and his wife told me, you know, oh, if you're watching it, watch for your dad. He's in the background there. And I was like, oh.
Did he know he was Italian?
I had no idea.
The Italian cowboy?
They used to call him Paisano Cowboy. I shit you not, that was his CB handle. His handle on CB was the Paisano Cowboy.
May I?
Yeah. That gives new meaning to the term spaghetti western.
Oh! Thank you.
Which right. Clint Eastwood starred in many of.
Yes.
Right? There you go.
On that note, I'm going to drive this home. We have one more song planned. Stone Cold Bush by the Red Hot Chili Peppers from the Mother's Milk record.
Yup. Four dirty boys singing about one dirty girl.
And we did a little switcheroo here. Joe is now playing his beautiful Music Man Stingray. What color would you say that is?
It's like, I think it's a red burst, red sparkle
burst.
It's like
burst. A sparkle black and red.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's beautiful.
It's called bowling ball red.
It does look a little bit like a bowling ball.
It does.
I'm playing guitar on my Music Man silhouette special because we're whores and we want. No, I'm kidding. We're doing a Music Man endorsement. Anyway, so here it is, another unrehearsed gem. And Joe's going to sing this. And how's this shot? Is this okay?
That's fine.
Okay. Here goes nothing. To thank our guests today.
Oh, Vince, no, your guests would like to thank you, Rich. I'm serious, man. We had a great time. I had a blast.
This was really freaking time. Awesome. Yeah. And please, please, let's do this again, whether it be on your show or you come back here if you don't mind taking the trek over to Staten Island again.
Love it, man. Love it.
Round of applause, guys, for Vince Tattinelli.
Awesome.
And Joe Cumia.
Awesome.
This was a lot of fun. And like I said before, I'll say it again. doing this podcast is really cool because I get to hang out with guys like this and play with you. Because who knows if we would have ever gotten to play together? You know what I mean? If it wasn't for this, and this is fun, and we get to play music. We don't have to get our balls broken by a venue owner. You know what I mean? We can play whatever we want. We don't have to worry about it. This is the coolest thing. Thank you so much for coming.
I'm dead serious, man. You got anything to do out on Long Island? You have a studio to work from.
That's awesome. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My co-host, Jarrett Pressman, with the awesome movie references.
Oh yeah.
We have some unfinished business.
I'm sure we could talk for a much longer time.
I'm positive. Awesome.
On keyboards today, Andy Escalise.
Nice. Thank you.
Great job.
My wife, Anne Marie Castellano on vocals.
Thank you.
Oh my God.
She's not in the room, so I'm doing her voice. Anyway, Brandy Metaxas hanging out with us today. I'm Richie Castellano. Thanks for listening to Band Geek. Watch out for Joe Cumia's podcast coming soon.
Thank you, sir.
Have a good one, guys.